everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's August 2025, and you're listening to episode 458, which is a conversation about the Baha'i faith. Today's guest is Dr. Derek Cooper. He is the Managing Director of the Thomas Institute, which is an educational travel company that specializes in learning on location. He is also an ordained minister who has traveled to more than 80 countries and the author of 15 books, including Christianity and World Religions and Christianity and New Religious Movements. Derek has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called A Christian Exploration of the Baha'i Faith, and you can read it for free at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. Derek, it's great to have you back on the podcast.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, Derek has done some in-depth research on various different new religious movements and world religions in the last decade or so. And so he's kind of an expert on some of those things. And one of those is probably a religion that most Christians do not know anything about. And it's the Baha'i faith. And so we do get questions here at the Christian Research Institute about the Baha'i faith. And so we just wanted to do a little bit of a deep dive. There are somewhere, it sounds like, about 10 million worldwide, somewhere around there, of Baha'i people. That doesn't seem like, as compared to other faiths, very many people. But give us a little overview about the Baha'i faith. So how old is it and what are its origins?
Yeah, it's one of those religions that's interesting because on the one hand, Baha'is would say that it's a religion that's always been around because God has always been revealing himself throughout time. On the other hand, we can go back to a very specific time in history. And so that's probably easiest to do. If we think about the modern history of what we call the Baha'i faith, it's actually less than 200 years old. So we can date it to around the year 1844, when the beginning of the Baha'i faith begins, and that's going to take place in Iran, so Persia, and that was part of the larger Ottoman Empire at the time. So 1844 is the initial stage of that, and then throughout the next several years, there's different components or developments of that that'll take place that I can go into more detail about. But just to summarize again, when we think about this religion, it's very ancient, so it's always been around in some way. And yet, on the other hand, it's very modern. It's from the 1800s Iran.
That's really interesting. So who are some of the key people that are connected to this faith historically? And you said Iran. So is it, I want to ask you in a moment if that has anything to do with Islam at all.
Yeah, absolutely. For the central figures, there's really four of them, and most of them have the letter B in their name. And so I'll kind of go over each of those, and we can put them in that time frame of the 1800s and 1900s, and they are Iranian, so Persian. And the first of those, I'll just use their titles because that's what they're most known for. So when we think about Christianity, we know that Jesus' name was Jesus, but we oftentimes refer to him as Christ, which is a title. And that's true for a lot of other religions. So when we think about these central figures within Baha'i, the earliest of them is someone who's called the Bab. And the Bab, it's an Arabic term, so it's not B-O-B, it's B-A-B. And what that means is gate or gateway. So the Bab is a person who declared himself to be the intermediary between God and humanity. And so he is an actual person, and he was from Shiraz, which is an historic town in Iran. And he is the one who declared himself to be the Messiah in 1844, which starts the modern development of Baha'i. So that's the Bab, and he's going to be killed in 1850. So he'll have a ministry that's a little more than 5 years, and he's going to create many followers. And one of his most well-known followers is someone whose name is a little hard to pronounce, but in English it's Baha'u'llah. And Baha just means glory in Arabic, and Ullah is similar to Allah. So Allah, the name for God in Arabic. So it means something like the glory of God or God's glory. And so that's the title that he was given by the Bab. And Baha'u'llah was a really wealthy aristocrat in Iran in the middle of the 1800s. And he became a devotee of the Bab, believing that the Bab was the Messiah that had been promised within Shia Islam. And I can go into more detail about Shia Islam. But Baha'u'llah was later determined to be the actual deity. So he was God, a manifestation of God, and we'll talk more about how that works within the Baha'i faith. But when we think about Baha'u'llah, he is a manifestation of God within Baha'i. And so in 1863 is when he makes that declaration, which is a very famous time historically for Baha'is. And like the Bab, he is also going to be imprisoned, and he's going to spend most of his adult life in his later years in prison or in captivity. And so he was actually exiled to lots of different countries because it was part of the Ottoman Empire, but he ends up the last years of his life in Israel. We have a third really prominent figure in Baha'i, and his name is Abdul Baha. And he was actually the oldest son of Baha'u'llah. And so he was regarded as the successor and really the interpreter of his father's teachings. But he was never considered to be divine like Baha'u'llah was and even like the Bab was. So that's Abdul Baha. And he's going to be the one who really stabilizes the religion of Baha'i. And then finally, another figure that I'll mention is his name is Shoghi Effendi. And Shoghi Effendi was the grandson of Abdul Baha, and he was someone who was very prominent throughout the early history of Baha'i because he created so many of the documents in Turkish, in Arabic, in English, in French. He spoke many languages, and he was an ambassador for the religion. So those are the four names. I'll go over them one more time because for those of us who are new to Baha'i, there's a lot of new terms. So there is the Bab, who is the original divine messenger within Baha'i. And then he has a follower named Baha'u'llah, who is seen as also a manifestation of God. The oldest son of Baha'u'llah is Abdul Baha. He is an interpreter. And then one of the grandsons of Abdul Baha is Shoghi Effendi. And so those four are probably the foremost central figures for early Baha'i faith.
A moment ago, Derek mentioned the Shia branch of Islam. And in the show notes, we want to link for you an article by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff called The Sunni Shia Split that will talk about the two major branches of Islam. So is there some place that the Baha'i have a particular world headquarters that, you know, people recognize as their headquarters, kind of like Roman Catholics recognize the center of where their headquarters is, the Vatican, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. And so one of the interesting features of the Baha'i faith is that it comes out of Islam, but it comes out of the minority branch of Islam. So when we think about Islam in general, the two main branches, or we could call denominations, are Sunni Islam, which is 85 or 90% of Muslims today, and then Shia Islam, which is 10 to 15%. So that's the much smaller denomination or group within Islam. So the Baha'i faith actually comes from Shia Islam because the center of Baha'i faith was Iran, and of all of the countries in the world, the country with the highest population, even today, of Shia Muslims is Iran. So that's where it begins as a faith. And so I mentioned the Bab and Baha'u'llah are both Iranians who would have been part of that general Shia Islam culture. But then what happens, because Iran at that time was part of the Ottoman Empire includes many, many countries historically, and one of those is Israel. So what happened is the headquarters of the Baha'i faith actually became Israel. And the reason why is because Baha'u'llah was going to be basically exiled to multiple countries, including Turkey and then finally in Israel. And there he is in Acre or Akko, which is in northern Israel, right outside of Haifa. And so that's where he's going to live all of his remainder of his days. And so that's where the Baha'i World Center is. So that's the name of the headquarters, the Baha'i World Center. It's right in Haifa. Haifa is the largest city in northern Israel, and it's overlooking the Mediterranean. And I can tell you that of all the centers of world religions, of headquarters that I've been to, the Baha'i World Center is the most beautiful. So just imagine this. You're on top of a really large hill, and you're looking down, and you see beautiful gardens going all the way down, and eventually it ends in the Mediterranean Sea. So for those of you who are listening, I'd recommend just typing in the Baha'i World Center in Haifa and just seeing an image of it. It's really beautiful. So that is where the actual headquarters of the Baha'i faith is.
Every episode, I point you to equip.org, which is the website of the Christian Research Institute. And I want to tell you about our various different outreaches in case you don't ever listen to the very end of the podcast. And that is equip.org has thousands of articles, all free, from the almost 50-year history of the Christian Research Journal. Those are available for you. Plus, if you haven't already added to your podcast feed, Christian Research Journal Reads podcast, you don't want to miss out on it because we have almost 130 episodes and they are all just audio articles of our most popular articles from the Christian Research Journal. You won't want to miss that. Plus, if you're on social media, please don't forget to check out our YouTube channel, which is The Bible Answer Man. And you can also find us on Instagram at Bible Answer Man as well, if you're on that platform. So we have more than 3,000 videos on our channel, The Bible Answer Man, on YouTube, and it's just a wealth of information. You'll also find episodes of the Postmodern Realities podcast, the Hank Unplugged podcast, and Christian Research Journal Reads as well, as also excerpts of the most asked questions on the Bible Answer Man. So you won't want to miss out on all of these resources there to equip you to understand what you believe and why you believe it. And so please head on over to equip.org. And now back to my conversation with Dr. Derek Cooper about the Baha'i faith. Well, you were just talking about their beautiful headquarters. As a matter of fact, we were doing a graphic for social media and I looked up some of the different photos of it, and it is quite impressive. It is a very stately building. Now, does the Baha'i faith have any particular sacred texts? When we think of Islam, we think of the Quran, we think of the Bible. When it comes to Christianity, do they have a specific holy book of any kind?
They do. And what's unique about Baha'i is that there are literally thousands of sacred texts within their religion. And the reason why is because historically, when we think about older religions, there was a prophet or a founder who had oral teachings, and it was usually after the founder's death that there became written teaching. So when we think about a sacred book in Buddhism or Islam or something along those lines, we have the sacred book comes after the death of the founder or the main prophet. It's actually the opposite when it comes to the Baha'i faith. So talking about the Bab and Baha'u'llah, both of these would have written hundreds and hundreds of writings over their lifetime, especially Baha'u'llah. So when he was in exile for decades, he had the ability to write. And so they would write very mystically. So the writing style that they used, a part of it was based off of the Quran. And so they would use that because they're coming from a Muslim tradition. But at the same time, they would write very mystically. So the reports about how they wrote is they basically would just get a piece of paper and something to write with and go off in a trance. And so that's how they could write thousands of documents. So most of the documents that we have from the Baha'i faith have never even been translated into English. So they would have originally been written in either Arabic or in Farsi, which is the language of Iran. However, we do have what we would say is probably like the Quran for Islam or the Torah for Judaism. And that is what's called the Most Holy Book. So that's the English translation. So it's a little different in Arabic. It's called Kitab Aqdas, but it just means the Most Holy Book. And so that's a book that has been written by Baha'u'llah. And it contains laws. It contains some kinds of philosophy. But in general, it's the holy book within the religion of Baha'i. So if we think about if you were to ask a Baha'i person what their most quintessential holy book or sacred text would be, then it would be the Most Holy Book.
So if you had to think about condensing the Baha'i faith and describing it in one word, what would that word be?
Yeah, you know, I think about this a lot. In some of the videos that I've made, I talk about, you know, worldview issues. So we think about a religion, what the problem is, and then what the solution is. And as much as possible, it's helpful to think about maybe just one word to identify the problem and one word to identify the solution. And so, for instance, in Christianity, we might say something like the problem is sin and the solution is salvation. And when it comes to Islam, we might say the solution is submission. That's what the word Islam means. Islam in Arabic just means submission, submitting to God. So when it comes to Baha'i, I think the best word to describe what it represents is unity. We could also say oneness, but either oneness or unity, both referring to the same general concept. And that's because when it comes to Baha'i, there are three core teachings, and that is that God is one, that religion is one, and that humanity is one. So when we think about maybe one word to describe it, I think unity or oneness is the best term.
So it seems that there are people of the Baha'i faith in so many countries. I mean, a majority of countries in the world. Is this idea of unity or oneness, is that what makes it so appealing? Or why is it so appealing to so many people in such different contexts?
Yeah, I think the oneness or the unity part is really important. One of those is, although as a world religion, the numbers itself are very small. So you were talking about at the beginning, the numbers, there's not, of course, compared to Christianity or Islam, where we have more than 1 billion Christians, more than 1 billion Muslims. We have a very small population of Baha'i. But what we do have is very high diversity within that population. So here's a good comparison to keep in mind. It's been estimated that when it comes to a Christian church, it has about a 5% racial diversity per church. And so if we think about the United States, for instance, it's still true today that if you were to go to an average church, it's usually the same ethnicity or race that's in that. So if it's primarily an Hispanic church, it's primarily Hispanic and not other races or ethnicities. And so if it's about a 5% racial diversity in a church, it's estimated to be about a 50% diversity in a Baha'i community. So that means it's 10 times more diverse than Christianity is in terms of the individual populations. So I think that is one of the things that makes it attractive is we live in a world today that's divided by race, it's divided by ethnicity and nationality. And so the Baha'i faith really emphasizes this unity and trying to come together, which a lot of people find very appealing. I think that there's also a real interest among people in its social teachings. So in Baha'i, you'll hear a lot about equality and a lot about tolerance and the harmony of science and religion and world peace. So in many ways, a lot of the desires of our culture, our secular culture, are going to be found in the religion of Baha'i. So if you want world peace, then you're going to find Baha'i very attractive because it's going to be talked about. And then we could probably just summarize this as well by just thinking in general, the progressive revelation, which we'll come back to, that's another really important part of Baha'i. And I think it's something that people find attractive because this is what it allows. because of the way that Baha'i understands progressive revelation, that means that if you grow up Jewish, you don't have to convert from Judaism to Baha'i. You can retain your Jewish identity, and you can just, what they say, make a declaration to Baha'i. So that is that you can adopt some Baha'i principles, but you don't have to turn away from your Jewish faith. Or, for instance, if you're a Christian, you don't have to turn away exclusively from your Christian faith. So that's at least what Baha'i would say. Christianity would not say that. But in terms of Baha'i faith, it says you can have your childhood faith as well as a new faith, and those can work together.
So you said that it is pretty diverse in terms of it's just not concentrated in one country or another, and it seems very kind of egalitarian in the sense of, hey, you can be your religion, you can be Baha'i. Do you think that the, you know, average Christian and, you know, our American, you know, most of our listeners are in American neighborhoods, would we run into people who would hold to Baha'i or been influenced by Baha'i teachings?
Yeah, we would certainly run into people who are Baha'is more so than in the past. So one of the things that we consistently see in America is that America is becoming more diverse religiously, where virtually every city and every major neighborhood is going to have people from lots of different religious backgrounds. So it is likely that you are going to come across someone who is from the Baha'i tradition. And as you get to know them a little bit more, that will become apparent. They're not like some other religious traditions. For instance, if you come across a man who is Sikh, that you would be able to see maybe from their clothing that they are from a specific religious tradition. That won't necessarily be the case with someone from Baha'i, but it is increasingly more likely that you're going to come across someone who is from Baha'i. And as you get to know them, you'll learn more about some of those differences between Christianity and Baha'i. But I think in general, what a lot of people in Baha'i would say is that if you run into them and are talking about religion, they would say, oh, you can still be a Christian and you can also be Baha'i. Whereas, of course, as Christians, we would not say the same thing. We would say, if you're a Christian, you can't be Baha'i, but that would be something you'd come across more.
Well, the interesting thing to me is that there's not a huge number of Baha'i compared to, you know, obviously Christianity or Islam or something like that. And it is so diverse, like, in other words, spread out throughout the world. So how did it get out of Iran and where its roots are to become so widespread, like worldwide? I mean, did they have some kind of evangelistic movement, or how did that happen, really?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really curious. And I've heard people say that it's a religion that has grown quicker than any other religion in history. I don't think that's the case necessarily, because if you look at other religions and you see there's been a lot of research on how these different religions develop, but it definitely is the case that this is a religion that started in the 1840s in Iran and now is represented in virtually every country in the world today. So we think, how is that possible? Well, there's a few ways that it's possible. One is that from its earliest days, the Bab, so the one who identifies himself as the Mahdi, the Messiah, he is one who's going to have a variety of followers. So like Jesus, he's going to choose disciples. He's going to choose 19, whereas Jesus chooses 12, because 19 is a more symbolic number in Iran at that time within Islam. And those followers are going to go out. And just due to the nature of the Ottoman Empire at that time, because their religion started in Iran, we think, well, it's going to be really confined to that, but it won't, because it's actually part of the Ottoman Empire. And so all of the earliest people connected to this religion, like the Bab, like Baha'u'llah, like Shoghi Effendi, Abdul Baha, they traveled a lot throughout multiple countries, and they also spoke multiple languages. So the last two that I mentioned, Abdul Baha, as well as Shoghi Effendi, they spoke multiple languages and they travel widely, not just throughout the Middle East, but also throughout Europe. And so because of their travels, they went all throughout. This is, you know, the time period we're in now is the early 19 and middle 1900s. So during that, for several decades, Abdul Baha and Shoghi Effendi basically went on a campaign to spread the Baha'i faith, and they were warmly received in all of these different places in Europe, and then the message is going to come to North America. And then another thing to keep in mind is when the Ottoman Empire collapses in the early 1900s, when it comes to Israel, it's the British takeover. So it's called the British Mandate. That's the historical term. And when the British take over, they actually are very receptive to the Baha'i faith. And so that allows it to thrive. And so that's why today the headquarters is in Haifa, and why Baha'is, even though a very recent religion, have such extensive property, because they were allowed to do so by the British. And so because of their relationship with the British, and then also the travels throughout Europe and North America, it allows this very tiny religion to spread. And then as it spreads to these other places, it resonates because it's such a modern religion. So some of the things that I was mentioning, that it's a religion that really emphasizes the oneness of humanity. It emphasizes world peace and tolerance. So for those reasons, I think it's become much more common and accepted.
Well, now I want to ask you a little bit about their theology, because it's so fascinating that, of course, like I said, I looked up photos of it, that they have this huge headquarters in Israel of all places. Its roots are in Iran, and that also it's such a small religion numbers-wise, but it seems to have spread so widely. So tell us a little bit more about their theological views. For example, is it a monotheistic religion like Judaism, Christianity, or Islam? Do they believe in God or Allah? And if they do believe in, you know, a God, is that God revealed in a specific way? Like we think of Christianity, you know, revealed in the Bible. And just curious about that, just because you said that their one word you would describe is like unity, you know? And so it's just like, well, does that have theological roots?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we would actually describe Baha'i as a monotheistic faith. So monotheistic just meaning one God. And this would be different from something like Hinduism, where we'd say there are many gods. But when it comes to Baha'i, we say it's monotheistic. So it's a belief in one God. But I know that sounds a little strange because we've talked about already two different gods, one of those being the Bab and the other being Baha'u'llah. But here's how Baha'i would understand this. Baha'is would say that they are strictly monotheistic, so they only believe in one God who is the creator and the sustainer of the universe. But they would also teach that God's essence is unknowable and it's inaccessible to human beings. And so what God does is, in God's kindness, God reveals himself through what are called manifestations. And so these manifestations of God are believed to be God on earth. And usually, because 9 and 19 are symbolic numbers in Islam as well as in Baha'i, that we see that there's 9 manifestations of God throughout history. Most of those are going to be names that we're all familiar with because they are prophets or deities in other religions. So, for instance, Abraham and Moses are considered to be manifestations of God within Baha'i, because they would say that thousands of years ago, God is going to essentially come down to earth to manifest himself and to present his teachings for humankind. And so that would be through Abraham, and then hundreds of years go by, and then Moses, and then hundreds of years go by, and that could be to Zoroaster. Zoroaster is going to be a very famous deity for Baha'i in Iran. So when we think about Zoroastrianism, if that's a term that people have heard before, that's an ancient religious tradition connected to Iran. Other names that we're all familiar with are names like Buddha, and of course Jesus, and Muhammad. So these also are understood to be manifestations of God. So the Buddha comes, and then thousands of years or hundreds of years later, Jesus is going to appear in a different part of the world. And then hundreds of years later, Muhammad is going to appear in a different part of the world. So that's how God is revealed, through different manifestations. However, Baha'is would still argue that it's still one God. We don't ultimately know this God in any perfect way. Instead, what we have is that God is going to appear and manifest throughout history in distinct ways. And specifically, those are some of the main manifestations of God.
So you mentioned different teachers that are associated, figures that are associated with various religions like the Buddha and Buddhism and Muhammad and Islam. So what about Christianity and Jesus Christ? How do the Baha'i look at Jesus Christ? Who do they say that he is?
Baha'is would say that Jesus is a manifestation of God. So in that regard, he is God. So he's a divine messenger, and he is just like all of the other manifestations of God. He's revealing God's will for people at that time and at that place. And so they would acknowledge that he has a divine origin. They would say that his teachings are accurate and they reflect what God wants for humanity. They would say that he was born of a virgin. But they would be very different from us in a classical historical tradition, because they would not say that Jesus is the unique incarnate Son of God. They wouldn't say that he's the second person of the Trinity, for instance. And they wouldn't say that his death on the cross is the only means of salvation for humans. So, in other words, they would see Jesus as a manifestation of God, but he's in a very long line of manifestations. He's not the last revelation or the ultimate revelation, as we Christians would say. And another thing to keep in mind is we use specific terms to refer to Jesus, for instance, as Son of God. And that's a term that could be used in the Baha'i tradition for people like Baha'u'llah. So there are different terms also, like the Messiah. I've mentioned that before, but the Bab and Baha'u'llah were also seen as a Messiah figure. So similar in some ways, in the sense that they would believe that Jesus is God, but different from us as Christians, because they would not believe in him exclusively as God, and that his death on the cross is the means of our salvation.
So to piggyback on some of the things that you just mentioned about the Baha'i faith, I'd like you to help us by responding to some YouTube comments we've received on one of our videos about the Baha'i faith that we posted in the last year or so. And here's one of them. So help us think through how to respond to this as a Christian. Quote, Baha'is believe Baha'u'llah is not the final manifestation of God. More will come roughly every 1,000 years. We view science and religion as harmonious and affirm both the virgin birth and the eschatological symbolism of the Trinity, the Father as the Son as a pure mirror, and the Holy Spirit as its rays. Humanity often rejects divine messengers, yet all manifestations from Christ to Moses to Muhammad reflect one source. Baha'u'llah's teachings are meant for this age, just as Jesus's were for his time, end quote. How would a Christian respond to that and say, yeah, it's not the same as what you just said as far as Christianity is concerned?
Yeah, so for Baha'is, what they would say is that these other manifestations of God, so for instance, Jesus coming 2,000 years ago to Israel, that was appropriate for that time and for that age. However, that's not the final revelation of God. There's going to be another one that comes. And for Baha'is, they would say hundreds of years later, Muhammad comes, and Muhammad is mostly in Saudi Arabia. And then we have about 1,000 years after that, the Bab comes to Iran and Baha'u'llah comes to Iran as well. So they believe that there are these different manifestations. And even when it comes to Baha'u'llah, Baha'u'llah has a writing, he has many writings, as I mentioned, but one of those is where he declares that there is going to be another manifestation of God after him, but that it'll be about 1,000 years from now. So there's this expectation in Baha'i that we have a manifestation of God and it's appropriate at that time and in that place. But as time goes on, that we have newer revelations that are going to be more appropriate. And as Christians, that's not what we believe. We believe that Jesus provides the ultimate revelation of God. And as the New Testament talks about, Jesus is the icon of God. You know, he's the image of God. And so when we're looking at Jesus, we are looking at who God is. And so the will of God has been manifested to us through the life and the ministry, the teachings of Jesus Christ. And so we're not looking to the future for another manifestation of God to appear. Instead, we're looking in the future for Jesus to reappear back on earth again. And so for the Christian tradition, our eyes are always gazing toward Jesus. And so when we go back and read the Old Testament, for instance, we're doing so from the lens of knowing that Jesus is ultimately what the Old Testament is referring to. It's preparing us for Jesus. When we're looking at the New Testament, we see Jesus everywhere. So in the Gospels, Jesus is here on earth teaching. And then we look at the letters in the later part of the New Testament. For instance, by Paul, Paul's talking about after Jesus's time, how the Christian community forms based off the teaching and ministry of Jesus. And then throughout church history, we're always looking forward at him. So this is going to be one of the big contrasts, is Baha'is would never be looking toward Jesus in the future. They're going to be looking forward to new manifestation. And even they're not even going to be looking at Jesus in the past, because if we've had several manifestations of God since Jesus, and so for Baha'i, that's three. So they would say that we had Muhammad, we had the Bab, and we had Baha'u'llah. And the latest of those is Baha'u'llah. So more or less, we should focus on the teachings of Baha'u'llah, because those are the more recent, which means they're the ones that are most appropriate for us today. That's how they would look at it. And of course, as Christians, we want to stay focused on Jesus no matter where we are in history.
So are there other similarities and differences between Baha'i and Christianity? That was very helpful to help us understand what they think about who Jesus was in terms of manifestations, and then why they would want to focus on what they would say is a recent manifestation. So are there other things that we should know about ways in which the Baha'i faith is similar and different from Christianity?
Yeah, I would say a few similarities that we can keep in mind. One of those we've talked about, that both Baha'is and Christians believe in one God. So they're both monotheistic religions. Also, in terms of the moral teachings, in general, there are a lot of similarities. So when it comes to Baha'i, they would have ethical principles like love others, and just as we do in Christianity, thinking about the golden rule. There would be the importance of prayer within Baha'i and Christianity. So for Baha'is, there are usually two prayers a day, or actually there's two different readings throughout the day, one in the morning and one in the evening. And then there's usually a main prayer, a centering prayer that's prayed usually between noon and the afternoon. And there's also a belief in scripture, so that there's holy writings. And there's also a belief in the afterlife. So the Baha'is will have a concept of the afterlife just as Christians do. But there are also lots of differences, and it really is the differences that matter. So I've talked about the differences in the nature of God. So we as Christians believe that God is a Trinity, so that God is manifest in the Father, Son, and Spirit. All are God. So the unity and the Trinity, all of those coming together, the one and the three. In terms of the nature of Christ, we've also talked about that, where although Baha'is would recognize Jesus as a manifestation of God, they would differ from us as Christians, because we believe that Jesus is the unique person of God, fully human, fully God, and who atoned for our sin through his death and through his resurrection. And that, of course, relates to salvation. We as Christians believe salvation is by grace. It's through faith in Jesus. It's not through some other person. And there's not something that we can do to earn the love of God or our salvation, that we are relying upon the finished work of Jesus Christ. And I'd say probably the last thing to keep in mind, too, is just the finality of that revelation. So I've mentioned for Baha'is, they believe in progressive revelation. So they believe that the latest manifestation of God was Baha'u'llah, but several hundred years from now, there'll be a new manifestation of God. For us as Christians, we believe in the finality of Jesus's revelation.
Now I want you to respond to another of the YouTube comments we've received on our video. And that is something that kind of is emphasized by something you said at the beginning of this podcast, where you would kind of characterize Baha'i in one word as unity. So here's the comment from YouTube, quote, "Baha'is believe that God sends manifestations like Jesus, Moses, Muhammad, and Baha'u'llah to guide humanity. The faith centers on unity and rejects racism, sexism, and nationalism. Its teachings aim to establish a global society founded on peace, justice, and equality for all. Unity over division is the path forward," end quote. So how would a Christian respond to that? I mean, affirm things that they could agree with, but also point out the uniqueness of Christianity.
Yeah, and I would say that as Christians, we certainly agree with parts of that. So there is a component of Christianity which we are knowing that one day we're going to have the fullness of truth. And, you know, as the book of Revelation talks about, where we're going to see all nations, all nationalities, all languages together, we're going to be united worshiping God. So there is something beautiful about that in Christianity, that there is a unity that we also strive for. But that unity is not that we're trying to bring everybody together so that we all have to be the same in how we look or anything like that, but that we're unified in our worship of God. When it comes to Baha'i, they really are focused on setting up a new world order. So you'll see that kind of language. So one of the things that I didn't mention is when it comes to the authority of the Baha'i faith, there is what's called the Universal House of Justice. And the Universal House of Justice was established by Shoghi Effendi, one of those figures that I mentioned. And it really is the leadership. And there's a document that was written about world peace. And in that document, it talks about that this really is the central feature of the Baha'i faith today, is that it wants to have a world that's focused on technology, the future, tolerance, equality, world peace, and those kinds of things. For us as Christians, as I mentioned, we are focused on Jesus Christ. We're focused on Jesus is the one who has established the kingdom of God on earth. And we as the church are trying to be faithful to the message of Jesus Christ. We're trying to share the love of Christ with all of those around us. And we're also praying and waiting for the day that Jesus Christ will return on earth to set everything right and to bring together all of the brokenness that currently exists. But in terms of those principles of Baha'i, it really is a focus today on values of the secular culture. Not that there's anything wrong in and of itself with wanting to have peace and wanting to have a sense of equality. But as Christians, our aspirations are really focused on God's kingdom being here on earth and one day God's kingdom coming fully to earth and being part of that, which is means that we're going to look at things differently from a secular worldview.
You mentioned that there is a good possibility that we could run into somebody who is Baha'i or tries to syncretize Baha'i with their faith, whether it's Christianity or Judaism or something else. And so if someone, one of our listeners, is running across such a person and wants to share their faith in Christ with someone of the Baha'i faith, what would you recommend that they do and they say? And are there some pitfalls that they should avoid, or are there things they shouldn't say?
Yeah, I would say there's a few things I'd recommend that they would say and a few things that they would not say. So one of those is certainly to, you know, as Jesus talks about, to love our neighbors as ourselves. So to be loving, to be respectful. In general, when we're sharing our faith with other people, if we are going to be rude to them, then it's just simply going to be an opportunity for them to have assumptions about what Christians believe and how they act and not listen. And so we want to be, you know, as respectful as possible and know that we're interacting with other human beings who are created in God's image. So listen to the things that they talk about, but be loving and respectful. The other is I would really focus on Jesus Christ because, of course, as Christians, that's who we are focused on. And to affirm the work of Jesus Christ, to focus on the gospel message of what Jesus came on earth to do, to focus on the uniqueness of Jesus, to focus on him living on earth, his literal death, his literal resurrection. And so Baha'is in general would want to say, yeah, we think that Jesus was great and we believe that Jesus taught amazing things. And so I would just encourage them to go specifically to certain passages in the Gospels. And as you look through the Gospels, you certainly see that Jesus is not just interested in moral teachings. So although he will talk about loving others as ourselves, there's also very specific things that he says about himself, and that we see throughout the New Testament that there is an exclusivity that Jesus demands, that Jesus talks about, we don't serve two masters. If we do, we're going to have a divided house. So we have to serve God, which means that we can't serve the things of this world. So as much as Baha'is would really want to focus in a more generic understanding of who Jesus is, that he loved everybody and he wanted everybody to get along, when you go deeper in the Gospels, you see that Jesus is talking about the kingdom of God here on earth, and the authority that he brings and his very clear teachings, which are much more than just being nice. So in addition to that, I would say there's some things probably to avoid. And one of those is to not assume that when we use terms like Son of God or Messiah or prophet, that that's always understood to be exclusive to Jesus. So I mentioned earlier that these are also terms that Baha'is would use. So they would use a phrase like Son of God or prophet or Messiah or promised one to refer to the Bab or Baha'u'llah. So I just want to make sure those terms are very specific. So when we're talking about Jesus as the Son of God, that we maybe use a different way to refer to that so that we don't make a confusion with Baha'is. Another thing is, I would say, don't immediately feel the need to go on defense and to say, oh, Baha'u'llah, he was a liar, or nothing what he said is true. So something that's just generally helpful to keep in mind is we know from Scripture and the Christian tradition that there is a thing called natural revelation. And that is that God has revelation that is apparent to all of humanity, that's not just exclusive to Christians. So as Christians, we believe that we're exclusive to supernatural revelation that is specific to the work of Jesus here on earth. But in terms of just looking around us, using our brains and looking at nature, we can make certain assumptions. And the same is true for people of Baha'i. They can make assumptions that can be accurate. And so don't just immediately dismiss everything that they talk about. And then, you know, related to that, I would just say in general, when you're working with a Baha'i, not to criticize, you know, their values on world peace and tolerance, but to make a road, inroad into how that relates to Jesus. So I would say, don't dismiss what we might regard as secular values, and instead say, oh, when it comes to world peace, for instance, you can have them share that and then make a connection to Jesus and say, oh, you know, well, this is what Jesus says about peace. And so as much as you can be, you know, affirming what they're saying about a concept, but redirecting them toward Jesus and how, as the Christian tradition, Jesus is saying very specific things that we can share with them.
Well, thanks. This has been very fascinating and interesting. I didn't know that much about Baha'i before you wrote the article and we had this conversation. So now, finally, I have a fun question for Derek. As I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, he is the managing director of an educational travel company, and that company does some learning on location, which, by the way, would be great for any of our listeners who are parents looking for ideas for a gap year for their student, maybe. But out of all the different countries that you visited, Derek, what's your favorite country to visit?
Oh, it's such a great question. It's really hard. I can give you two different answers real quickly. So I would say in terms of my favorite city is Istanbul in Turkey. And the reason why I love it is because it's just so full of energy and life. And so The people are wonderful. The food is excellent. The architecture is amazing. We see really two religious traditions side by side. So we have the bulk of the Christian empire. So thinking about what's called the Byzantine Empire, this is where Constantine lives and where much of Christian history takes place. And then we also have the backdrop of Islam and the Ottoman Empire that's going to merge. We've been talking about the Ottoman Empire in this episode, where we're learning this is where Shia Islam as well as the Baha'i faith start. So Istanbul is definitely my favorite city. In terms of my favorite country, I'm going to go with Brazil. Brazil is also one of those places. It's full of life. The people are wonderful. The food's amazing. And it just has such a distinct feel when you go to Brazil. Most of their cities are along the water, which really helps. It's beautiful. And the people just are a lot of fun. And it's a beautiful language. And in my humble opinion, Brazilian Portuguese is the most beautiful language on earth. And I just love everything about Brazil, you know, football, which we call soccer, and the sports, just it's so full of life. When I think about Brazil, it's like it's a place that's bursting with life.
Wow, that's probably going to make some of the folks who like to travel look into it if they haven't been to Brazil or to Turkey yet, where Istanbul is. Well, thank you so much, Derek, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
It's my pleasure. Love being here.
You've been listening to episode 458 of the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest was Dr. Derek Cooper. He has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called A Christian Exploration of the Baha'i Faith. And you can read it for free without a paywall at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.